Hour numero dos is underway. This is the Rob Brown Show right here on ESPN Upstate. I am Rob Brown, back in the network studio. The seductive stylings of a man, Chris, is coming across your speakers. Narrator of your dreams, ladies and gentlemen. Chris filling in for Diesel as he is off on vacation this week. How you doing, big dog?
Man, I'm doing good. Coming off that Panthers loss to the Raiders. You were talking about that earlier on Sunday, man. And it was, 34-30. And, the Panthers with the ball in the last, with time ran out, but just couldn't get anything done.
Yeah, you know, I got to say, and we're going to get into that. Actually, what the hell? Let's just do it now. We got Dave Schultz from WNSP Radio coming up in the next segment to talk a little college ball with us. So we'll spend some time talking the Nash. Oh, man, my boomer is going to be messed up. All right, hang on. Let me try that again. The Nash Football League. There we go. Got to get that Chris Berman in there. I'll tell you, I was terribly disappointed with what I saw out of the Panthers.
Right.
Not terribly disappointed. Teddy B did some big things with the football. 75-yard touchdown pass to Robbie Anderson. Keeps them in the game. 4 minutes left in regulation. Ball at their own 30-yard drive. The Panthers, plenty of time to take the lead. But they just kind of stalled out a couple of times. Look, there's only one thing that I'm going to say. And this is something that NFL coaches make this mistake all the time. All the time. Sean Payton did it this weekend at one point for the Saints. And the point that I'm making is that, look, Sean Payton is a Super Bowl winning head coach and a guy who was known as one of the evil scientists on the offensive side of the football. He makes this mistake sometimes too. And it's a lesson that Matt Rhule, I hope, will learn for the Panthers. When you find yourself in game dictating situations, you have to put the ball into the hands of your best player. I understand that with Alex Arma back there at fullback, and you need less than a yard on fourth down in order to move on and give yourself an opportunity to win. I understand that there is that mentality of, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and I can't tell you, Chris, how many times I've heard from football coaches around the country. If you can't get 1 yard on the ground, you don't deserve to win, right?
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
I've heard that my whole life.
That was just a game of inches. I mean, it really is. And if you can't do that, especially when it counts, if you can't do that when it doesn't count, you're lost. You're gone.
If it is a game of inches, and I've heard football coaches my entire life say, if you can't get 36 of them on one play to win the game, then you don't deserve to win. But here's the thing. If you're in the National Football League, and I believe this and I continue to believe it, if you're in the National Football League and you need 1 yard for a chance to win, do you know who gets the ball? Your best player.
Yeah.
Especially if your best player is a running back like Run CMC, okay? The best player needs the ball. I understand that you wanted to believe that a fullback dive should be good for a yard. But here's the thing. It is not by default. This is the National Football League.
Right.
Right? And on top of that, Carolina's offensive line is good, I guess. Good. Not great. Good. And you were going up against a Raiders defense where your strength all night had been tossing the ball around, which shocks the hell out of me, to tell you the truth. I didn't expect for the Panthers' success to come on winging the football around. Robbie Anderson was doing things, Run CMC catching the ball out of the backfield as he is prone to do. You have to put the ball into the hands of your best player. There's no reason Run CMC doesn't get that football. In fact, at a number of times, Carolina was going I formation plays with Run CMC at the tailback and doing pitch outs, right? Yeah. If you have a back, and there's only 5-6 of them around the entire league right now, but if you have a back that you can get the football on a spread out of the I formation, and he can 8 out of 10 times outrun the entire defense to the edge, to the long side of the field, then that's a smarter play than giving it to your fullback who gets 1 or 2 carries a game.
Yeah.
And these are the types of lessons that Matt Rhule will unfortunately have to learn on the job, right? He has to learn that on the job. He has to understand in spots like that, you have to go to your names, to your big-time players. But I will also say this. I was not disappointed by the Carolina Panthers offensively. The numbers were there. Big spot production was good, with the exception of a little bit of predictability here and there, right? The play calling wasn't entirely creative all the time. But top to bottom, Chris, I was actually pretty pleased with the Panthers in a very competitive game.
They scored 30 points, and that's something. Most games you score 30 points, you win, if your defense is up to the task of stopping your opponent. And that's obviously what happened. The Carolina defense could not stop the Raiders. And the offense was scored, did well. Like I said, they scored 30 points, but if your defense can't get there, you're not going to win those games.
100%. Now, we talked about some of the good. Let's talk about a little bit of the bad. There were three numbers that I am concerned about. Three numbers that I am worried about that I think the Panthers need to be paying attention to. The first one is zero. Zero is the number of sacks that the Panthers recorded against Derek Carr.
Right.
Now, let's say two things about Derek Carr. Derek Carr reminds me a little bit because of two features. Do not think that I'm putting him in the same caliber as this guy. Okay. But Derek Carr has some Drew Brees-like qualities. Two of them particularly. Number one, he is very good releasing the football very quickly. Okay. Derek Carr gets the ball out. When he makes a decision to throw, that ball is gone. It's just gone. Brees is kind of like that. You get him in the pocket, you think he's going down, and then the next thing you know, the ball's already 10 yards down the field before the guy who had a sack doesn't. Yeah. Number two, Derek Carr is able to get out of tackles. He has a proclivity for escaping arm and ankle tackles inside of the pocket. He's not an easy quarterback to sack. So it wasn't like you were going up against a statuesque Tom Brady who takes a little longer to get rid of the ball and is more likely to go down as soon as he get touched. But you got to come up with two or three against the Raiders. You got to come up with two or three. Walking out of that game with zero sacks, two sacks in that game, Chris, makes the difference between the Raiders scoring 34 and the Raiders scoring 28.
Sure. Absolutely.
Second one that I think is important that the Carolina Panthers have to keep in mind moving forward. The second thing is Josh Jacobs of the Raiders, 3.7 yards per carry. Okay. Coming into this game, the big discussion was do not let Josh Jacobs into the end zone, right? The former Packer, guy who was known for scoring touchdowns. I think it was a touchdown leader, tied last year as touchdown leader. You can't let him in the end zone, and that's fine. They actually did do a pretty good job of not letting Jacobs break off any big runs, right? They limited him to small chunks of yardage here and there, which is good. But you got to keep the starting running back numbers down to 2.2, 2.4 yards per game when you are going up against a team that has a tendency to be a run-heavy team like John Gruden's team does. Now, I also want to say, Chris, that is a huge improvement over last year's Panthers team, which saw running backs explode into the secondary routinely and almost without resistance. It was a vast improvement in an area, Chris, that we still need to see more improvement.
And they're going to have to get those. They're going to have to put pressure in the backfield on the quarterback. They're going to have to contain the running back, especially going to the outside screen passes. They're really going to have to get in there and guard against that. They're going to have to put pressure on the quarterback, and they're going to have to get those sacks in order to make that difference in the game. And just it's reiterating exactly what you were talking about. But they're going to have to – that's one of the areas they're really going to have to work on is putting pressure on the quarterback.
The third number that I want you to pay attention to, this is a kid that I was intrigued by. We talked a little bit about him during camp. Jeremy Chinn, the rookie do-it-all out of the Missouri Valley Conference, who gets brought up to Carolina, 7 solo tackles attributed to Jeremy Chinn. This dude is giving you a reason to be excited, okay? This guy was flying around the field, coming up with big plays here and there. Jeremy Chinn is a guy that you as a Panthers fan ought to be excited about. Keep an eye on him. Some other things that are notable. Defensive end Brian Burns saw the most snaps out of the defensive front along with rookie tackle Derek Brown. Look, one thing that I like but has a question mark next to it, this team, Chris, very heavily leaning on young guys.
Right.
Very have a lot of rookies, a lot of inexperienced guys, a lot of guys who only have 2 or 3 years of experience and not a lot as a starter. But they stepped up. I mean, yes, yeah. I look, I don't love giving up 30 to the Raiders, but this is not your daddy's Raiders. This team's got some good wide receivers. Derek Carr is one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the NFL. This was not a complete failure for the Carolina Panthers defense, Chris. I saw a lot of good out of it. Brian Burns, Derek Brown, Jeremy Chinn, young and experienced guys, rookies, second and third year guys without a lot of starting experience. And these guys stepped up. There's a lot. We've been talking about the offense with Teddy B and Run CMC and all these guys on the offensive side of the ball that need to develop into weapons. But, man, even though they gave up 30 yesterday, this is a rebuilding year for Carolina. And did we see some promise out of that defense yesterday?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things need to be worked on. But, yeah, you're right. It is a young defense, 2 to 3 years experience on most of the guys. The secondary has got to get the coverage just a little bit better and make those plays and block those passes. But, all in all, it's promising. You know, I think the Panthers are really in a development year this year, and this is going to be one of those transition years where they're going to get to the strong team that they need to be by making the draft choices and developing the players the way they need to.
So, protecting running backs is something that a lot of teams are trying to do, right? You want to get as many miles as you can under them before that contract up. Although, of course, over the weekend, we did see a huge, huge day for running backs with Alvin Kamara getting a new contract, and a handful of others have come down after that. 67 offensive snaps for the Carolina Panthers on Sunday against the Raiders. Of those 67, Chris, let's play a little Rob Brown Show Home Edition. Of the 67 offensive snaps the Panthers took, how many was running back Run CMC on the sideline for?
Of 67, wow. 18.
2.
Really? 2. Wow.
He played 65 of 67 offensive snaps, did Run CMC over the weekend.
Wow.
Here's what I'm going to say about that. You want your best player on the field. He is the best player on this team, hands down. Is anybody arguing with that? Looking around, taking a survey, I see no hands raised. I didn't think so. Okay? Best player on your team, no doubt about it. With that being said, you do not want to jeopardize this kid's season.
Right.
But you certainly don't want to jeopardize his career. Be careful with him, Matt Rhule. Okay? I'm not saying take him off the field. I'm saying 65 of 67 snaps with Run CMC on the field is how you put my – and he didn't touch the ball on all of them, obviously. He's a distraction in a lot of cases who's not at threat of getting hit. I am saying be very careful you don't shorten his lifespan.
True.
Dave Schultz of WNSP Radio joins us coming up in the next break to talk a little college football. That's up next on the Rob Brown Show and ESPN Upstate. Down to the southern part of the South we go to welcome in from WNSP Radio. Mr. Dave Schultz is our guest to talk a little college football. Before we do that, Dave, my man, I know you're down there. Y'all had it coming down in buckets for the last day or so. Are you in Mobile or did you take off?
I did. I took off. They told me we're looking at historic rain. I'm like, you know what? I don't really need to be a part of history. So I took off back to my old stomping grounds in Lafayette. It's been absolutely gorgeous for a couple of days. I'm hearing power is down. Some trees are down. Mobile did not get the brunt of it. It's across the water. So you got Mobile County on one side, Baldwin County on the other. That's where Gulf Shores and Pensacola is. And I think they're getting the brunt of the storm.
Good deal. I'm glad you got out of there. I was just talking to my family down in Pensacola, and last interview, Colin Bester's over in Pensacola. The 3 mile bridge, which they just wrapped up construction on a brand new $733 trillion bridge project that took approximately 416 years to develop,
had
a barge hit it because of the storm and knocked down an entire section of the bridge. So the 3 mile bridge is ruined and downtown Pensacola is flooded. I am hoping that Mobile was able to avoid the same fate that downtown Pensacola got, but I am glad that you got out of there safe, pal.
Not great, Bob. Not great.
Yeah, not great at all. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get into a little college football. Speaking of not great, Dave, how about the Big 12 and the outstanding weekend that they had? Suffering losses to they lost to who? They lost to Iowa State. Iowa State lost to Louisiana. Coming out there from where you're hanging out now, the Big 12. Who probably, it looks like after week one, maybe should have adopted the Big Ten plan.
Yeah, maybe they should have opted out. Let's just say for the record, obviously there's a huge drop-off when you go from Oklahoma, Texas, and then the rest of the Big 12. It's not like one of the teams, from the Sun Belt took those two teams down. But nonetheless, Iowa State and Brock Purdy were, picked to do big things this year. Someone had them in the top five, maybe going to the Big Six. At the end of the season, I guess. And I don't even think Louisiana played all that well. Defensively, they were outstanding in the second half. They shut Iowa State down and out. But they have, I guess, over the top five receivers that were supposed to come back, four are out for the year. And so they're starting freshmen and sophomores offensively. So where I'm looking at a little criticism of the quarterback, maybe it's some of the wide receivers that are not running as sharp as routes as they should. But everyone's dealing with the same thing with the COVID and trying to get ready for the season. And then you tack one more thing on with the Cajuns. If you were watching it, you saw that their very popular offensive line coach, DJ Looney, died during an actual workout with the team. And so that can have an effect on everybody. And they just came through. Arkansas State did the same. And then against K-State, and then Coastal put it on Kansas, which a game which was not even really close from the get-go. And it's too bad South kind of blew it. South was, 24-6 over Tulane. They may not have stuck into the top 25, but they would have had probably the two biggest wins of the season so far. They were like 13-point underdogs to Southern Miss. They were 11-point underdogs to Tulane. And so they would have been getting votes. And then they get UAB coming in here, which now is going to be a backup quarterback apparently in about 10 days. It was a huge weekend for the Sun Belt and not a great one for the Big 12, that's for sure.
Yeah, the unholy trinity. And I'm really glad that Coastal Carolina-Kansas game where the Chanticleers were able to knock off the Rock Chalk Jayhawks, that game ended at like 2 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, which is good news because that's the only time that you're allowed to air that particular type of television.
Correct. Yes, I always liked that. He's not the coach anymore, but wasn't the head coach for a long time of Coastal Carolina, like the CEO of TD Waterhouse.
Yeah.
Like at halftime, you're asking what adjustments should you be making and what are my stock tips at the same time.
28-0 at one point. The Chanticleers were up on the Jayhawks. It was just ugly. That being said, I know Kansas had a rash of COVID infections. But there were only three players that were out because of COVID. So it wasn't like they were there. And that was kind of the story of week one, Dave, was how teams were going to look in an off season that was unlike any other before. You had some like Clemson that came out. Clemson didn't look like it missed a beat. I mean, they came out absolutely gunning. You had others that there were just so many question marks. FSU falls to Georgia Tech in their opening game of the Mike Norvell era. You had some teams like Kansas who just look wildly unprepared. I mean, we really saw a range of responses to the COVID offseason.
Clemson may have come out better than they did last year. They did not look good early on. Trevor Lawrence did not have the season he was expected to have last season. I know, he obviously escaped against Carolina. I know he had big numbers against Syracuse, but he didn't play particularly well in that ball game until it became a blowout. And so Clemson trying to put all that talk behind him, trying to bounce back from last year's championship game against LSU. They certainly are in the we'll be in the conversation again. But then you have a team like Navy who was just completely unprepared a couple weeks ago, right? And the coach is a really good coach. He's like, my fault. I did not have these guys prepared. I presume they will be moving forward. But you're right. Some teams did not handle all the time off well, and some teams did.
Talking to Dave Schultz of WNSP. You can follow him on Twitter at DaveWNSP, at DaveWNSP, a great college football follow. Let me ask. So here's the predicament I find myself in talking about Clemson today, my first day back on the radio since my little adventure.
Yeah, you okay?
Over the weekend.
Rob, are you all right, Rob?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I got I got 13% new teeth in my face. Other than that, everything's just fine.
Lightheadedness is a great way to say I finished off a bottle of bourbon. That's cute. You okay?
You know,
you all right?
As I told you the other day, I have no shame in announcing that your boy is very fond of his whiskey. So no shame in acknowledging, hey, look, I did something dumb under the influence. I wish I had that story, Dave, because then at least I'd have a reason for what happened as opposed to,
right. Nope,
you're just old and falling apart. That's all.
Well, I hope you get that checked out. We don't want that to, you know. That could be an issue. We don't want to be passing out, like, in the middle of a radio show or anything like that, right?
Yeah, that would be the worst thing that happened. At least then I'd fall face first into a couch.
right.
Here's my issue in talking about Clemson after that weekend. They did look great. Trevor Lawrence looked like the Trevor Lawrence we expect. Travis Etienne, 102 yards, 17 carries, looks like a guy. I mean, Clemson may very well have two finalists sitting in New York at the Heisman Trophy between those two young men. And defensively, they were flying around the field. I think Wake Forest really only had one or two moments where they were able to penetrate deep into Clemson territory. But on the flip side of that, Dave, I have to contrast that with it's Wake Forest with no fans in attendance. I'm just a little hesitant to go ahead and award Clemson the title trophy after one game.
Well, I mean, they're not going to lose in the ACC, right? Although I'm waiting to see if this Pittsburgh team is any good. I was not all that pressed with Miami the other night. I'm not quite sure how good they are. I don't think you can have it both ways. You know, who reacted well and who didn't? Well, Clemson reacted well, and they're talented. I mean, Clemson could have put up 75, right? I mean, Clemson called off the dogs. They're not going to embarrass Wake Forest just for the reason of embarrassing them. So, no, I give a tip of the hat. If I said they weren't playing very well last year at the beginning of the season, they came out and played really well at the beginning of this season. So, no, hat tip. I understand that they weren't exactly playing Charlotte or Citadel there, right? So, you know, I'm impressed with that victory.
Fair enough. The one game on their calendar that I think all of us have circled in red right now is coming up in early November when they take a trip up to South Bend, Indiana to take on Notre Dame. Notre Dame opened its season against Duke this weekend, and up until late in the fourth quarter, it kind of looked like Duke was going to potentially make it interesting before Notre Dame finally broke away. That game was in South Bend with, albeit limited fans in attendance. I got to tell you, and again, You don't want to have too many knee-jerk reactions in week one, Dave, but that Notre Dame-Clemson game, all of a sudden Clemson looks like a clear-cut favorite after week one.
There's no team in college football that I despise more than Notre Dame. I will be a huge Clemson fan if they can go into South Bend and take down the Irish. The Irish are like one notch below, because sometimes they're good. They're like one notch below an A&M. Because everyone always buys the A&M Kool-Aid. Oh, Kellen Mond is going to do this. Jimbo is going to do that. You know, Brian's going to do that. And Ian Book is going to do this. No, Notre Dame is never there. They're not that good. When it comes time to step up, they usually get a call or two. But then someone punches them in the face and they don't know what to do with it. If that game is within, depending on what the weather is, but if that game, if it's just cold, if that game has been within 14 points, I'll be shocked. In fact, in that game, I hope Clemson does run it up. I hope Clemson puts a 50 spot up on Notre Dame.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk that is also playing out of the ACC, which is, I mean, let's just call a spade here. They're bad. That's the game everybody's got questions about. Dave, I appreciate you, brother. Thanks for coming on, man. Stay safe down there in Louisiana, and hope all goes well in Alabama, buddy.
Thanks so much, Rob. Glad the mouth is all good. Be good, man.
You got it, partner. It's my man Dave Schultz from WNSP down in Mobile, Alabama. Give him a follow on Twitter, @DaveWNSP. Quick break back after this on the Rob Brown Show. This is ESPN Upstate. Welcome back to Rob Brown Show's on your radio. This is ESPN Upstate. Rob and Chris with you on a Wednesday afternoon, halfway to college football and NFL week numero dos. Good weekend in the National Football League. Very happy about how week one went down without fans in the majority of the stadiums. You know, and we talked about what TV was going to look like without fans in attendance, right? You had a lot of big games that home field would have meant a lot to the teams that were playing. I mean, to break in Lo-Fi State or SoFi or whatever Fi Stadium it is,
right,
out there in L.A. where the Rams play. That, you know, I have friends from St. Louis, and mm-hmm. when the Rams skipped town and headed to L.A.,
yeah,
I very rarely feel bad. Look, I'm a Saints fan, okay? I very rarely feel bad for other teams. I may feel empathetic with them and then just kind of go, that sucks, but hey, what are you going to do?
Right.
When St. Louis skipped town and headed out to L.A. to go hang out in the most fickle sports fan base in America, in Los Angeles, California, a sports base that I absolutely despise L.A. fans. Not the teams, just the fans, right? I don't have any issue with L.A. teams, but I hate the fans because they're fickle as hell. I felt awful for them. There was a little bit of karmic justice. Not that I'm happy about what's going on in 2020, but there's a little bit of karmic justice in that they skipped out on a very solid fan base in St. Louis and headed out to L.A., built this $1.6 billion stadium.
Right.
And their first season worth of games inside that stadium, nobody's there to see it.
Right, right. And, oh, yeah. You know, but I don't – no one could have predicted this coming. This was hopefully it will never happen in our lifetime again, or anyone else's lifetime for that matter. But my goodness, this is unprecedented. I mean, no one could see this coming, and you know, it's changed everything. You're talking about the empty stadiums. I like the video screens that some of the, like the NBA has put in the videos, the wraparound screens down in the first two or three rows. And they're actually showing fans on the video screens, and then of course they're pumping in sound. And those screens have gotten so cheap now that it's cost effective to do that, and it looks good on television as well. But to see the cardboard cutouts, that's strange. To see no fans or no cardboard cutouts at all, that's even weirder. Having watched sports now, I've been a diehard Atlanta Braves fan for many years, and I remember seeing day games on Channel 17 growing up where, you know, they had the cameras really had to search the stands to find some people, but that was just on a normal day, you know. It's weird. I don't know. What's the new normal going to be when we come out of this?
Yeah, and when is the other question. But, you know, as far as what we saw out of the television productions themselves for college and the NFL – you know, I was texting back and forth with a friend of mine during the Saints game, and it was interesting because with the virtual crowd noise pumped in,
mm-hmm.
But still having those field speakers, it was interesting because any time that they would show the stands themselves, it was a little uncanny, right? Because you've got what sounds like 60,000-70,000
right,
fans
chanting, right, yeah.
And the way the NFL did it. It's kind of cool. I don't know if you heard this, but the way the NFL did it, which was kind of interesting, Chris, is that they went into the NFL Films archives.
Right.
And they pulled recent games inside of all the stadiums, or at least the ones that have had games in them before. They pulled fan noise from games where fans were in attendance in the last couple of years. And then they created a tier level of noise. So there was fan level one, which is
right.
just what it's like when there's nothing happening. Fan
right.
level two, say after a, you
big
know, after
a big a, play.
Right. After like a second and one converts inside of
sure.
your own territory. Level three might be when a third and four converts, or you know, when the defense has got the team down to a third and six, a level four, which might be the team's got the ball or the other team has the ball in the red zone and your team's got them third and goal and needs a big stop, they go level four. And then level five would be after a touchdown gets scored. And they just kind of flip between those levels as the game is playing on. When the camera was pointed at the field, I never really thought about it,
right?
We were immersed. I never really thought about the virtual fans. It just looked and felt and sounded like a regular football game. But where it really impacted me the most is when they turned the field mics on. And so they'd go and they'd have the field mic on like Tom Brady calling signals against the Saints.
Right.
And you'd have a raucous fan base, but then you'd hear Tom Brady like 37X screen, 37X screen, just talking like a normal
right.
person.
He doesn't have to yell.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, wait, it's kind of jarring because we're used to hearing this, Omaha, Omaha, and you don't have that. And it was kind of jarring. But, you know, after week one, my big question mark going in was, is the NFL going to feel like it is worth watching without fans in attendance having this uncanny feel to it? And to me, Chris, I watch as many games as I could get my eyes on Sunday and Monday nights. And as off-putting as it may have been when they showed empty stands, mm-hmm. for the most part, the games were good.
Right.
They were well presented.
And I noticed that a lot of the camera angles, they were, for the most part, intentionally keeping the cameras pointed down and away from the stands. A lot of your veteran camera operators, they have certain habits that they've developed over years because they've done it 6,000 times over the years. And just they have certain camera movements that they're used to. Now they're having to relearn that to try to keep the stands out of the picture, you know, just because of what's going on. And it just becomes an illusion. And you think, well, you want to get that feel for the game like you always have by hearing that fan noise. And I think that's what the NFL is trying to do, is to just create that excitement, at least for the viewer, whereas maybe the players aren't feeling it as much because, like you said, Tom Brady's is out there and he's talking like you and I are. You know, everyone can hear and no one's, you know, the fans aren't screaming in their ears, and it's a whole different experience on that field from what it normally is, but they're trying to keep the fan experience to be the same.
Yeah, look, I think they're trying to present it, because here's the thing. We've all gotten used to NFL football over the last all of the seasons, right? We've gotten used to the way that a game looks and feels and sounds, no doubt about it. So they're trying to present that in the least jarring way possible. But the reality of the situation is, it is weird. It is off. And it's off for us. It's off for the players. Some teams responded very well to it. You know, I was very concerned, for instance, and I know I'm kind of going to my hometown team here, but here's the deal. Like, Saints, could you imagine, the New Orleans Saints have one of the loudest home stadiums in the mm-hmm. National Football League. It's every year. It's Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City is up there. It is, Seattle. The Seahawks always have one of the loudest stadiums, and New Orleans always has, those are traditionally the three loudest home field advantages in the NFL. In a regular year, could you imagine how loud that stadium is with Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming into town and taking on the Saints week one, game one, in a season where a ton of people had basically predicted, hey, look, whoever wins game one between the Saints and the Bucs has a leg up in an NFC South where one of those two teams is going to end up being the winner. And the winner of the NFC South, I think, is a genuine Super Bowl competitor. How loud that stadium would have been
right.
if there are fans in attendance, and instead of having the help on defense of the home field advantage, instead the Saints are out there letting Tom Brady have free communication on the field however he wants. There's no way around that. The way that comes across on TV is just you know, as a Saints fan, disappointing. I'm sure mm-hmm. as a Bucs fan, it was probably awesome. But it just had a very weird feel to it. So unless you're a team like the Cleveland Browns or the Atlanta Falcons that are used to playing in a stadium with no noise in it,
yeah.
This weekend was jarring, and a couple of teams responded very, very well. I think the Saints responded very well. The Chiefs had 19,000, but they responded well. I mean, hell, look at the Washington football team, by all means. Philly comes into town, a heavy favorite over the D.C. football team. And D.C. played like they had been doing it for years. By the way, that's the Ron Rivera effect. Okay? quick break. We'll come back in just a minute. We'll take a look down some of the other NFL games of the weekend, see who jumped out front early and who's got work to do to make up, Philly being one of them. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show and ESPN Upstate. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. This is ESPN Upstate. I'd like to thank my friends over at Brewery 85 who are sending me gifts of people missing their front teeth. Thank you very much. It's definitely not getting old, Chris.
No.
The teeth jokes are definitely not getting old at all.
Carter Bryant did, you know, we did almost a whole hour on it, you know, yesterday. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
At your expense, definitely. Yeah.
I got more text yesterday of gifts of Alvin Kamara's grill.
Yes.
Right?
That's what started it all, too. You know.
Yeah. I got more gifts yesterday of Alvin Kamara's grill asking me if that was going to be my look when I returned to the NFL, when I returned to radio, if I was going to have that NFL Alvin Kamara look. And I would be lying to you, Chris, to tell you that for just a minute I thought, what if I did? It would be the end of my career.
Well, I was hoping you would put up a really good high resolution picture of you with or without the current teeth, you know, or with the ones that were broken, and let the Photoshoppers just go crazy with it.
Well, I did put up a picture of me sans front two teeth.
Right, yeah.
And let me be clear. I didn't lose my front two teeth, right? They chipped off about halfway down, both of them. So I look like a hockey player that took a puck right to the grill, which, by the way, in a related moment, as I'm watching the NHL playoffs, because I decided for just a couple of days to fully embrace my my look as a professional hockey player, I would just like to go on the record and say, of all the things in sport, of all the people in sports, I don't know if there is a crazier group of people than hockey players that don't wear a full face mask. I don't like, I see these guys, and I know it's like a tough thing, right? Like, you got to be a tough guy. You got to be tough. You can't show weakness. I have seen hockey players take full speed slap shots, and when they slap shot those hockey pucks, they're going 100 plus miles an hour.
Yep.
And those things, if you've never, I worked for a hockey team down in Pensacola. I was a on ice MC, and so I spent pre, post, and intermission breaks down on the ice. And so if you've never picked up a hockey puck, the thing, it's not only that they are just completely solidified rubber, but on top of being completely solidified rubber, they freeze the hockey pucks before they bring them out to the ice, right?
Yep.
So they are rock solid. They're ridiculously hard. Like, you can use them as a hammer and to break glass with, no problem. I watch these guys without mask on take hockey pucks to the teeth. Dude, I was out when I took a concrete floor to the face, okay? I was passed out. I was blackout. I do not remember it at all. When I woke up, dude, it friggin' hurt. Like, a lot.
And I was gonna ask you, how much did your teeth, I mean, did it get down to the nerves? I mean, what?
No, fortunately, so you have one main nerve that runs down to the center of every tooth.
Right.
And fortunately for me, because I hit, and I don't know how to explain this correctly, I hit on the very bottom of my tooth, like right on the part that's the blade of the tooth, right? I hit there, and it cracked across the tooth. It didn't knock it up, and it didn't crack up the tooth, which would have been where I was in real trouble, would have been if it would have gotten to that nerve. Fortunately, it didn't. Well, as of right now, it does not appear that it got all the way to the nerve. I still have feeling in the teeth, etc.
Right.
That was me getting very lucky. That was me getting very lucky. It could have been much, much worse. But here's the thing: when I first came to, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was an 8.5, 9. All right. Oh, when I first came to, but Then it went away. I mean, but after about 5 minutes, it didn't hurt. Like, honestly, and I may have just still been in shock from realizing what had happened.
Right.
But it didn't hurt. I was able to talk. I was able to communicate. I was talking to the EMS and the firemen, no problem. So I got very, very lucky. Very, very lucky with that.
Wow.
All right, 844-477-3776, 844-GSP-ESPN. Text us at 71307. Your teeth jokes are not welcome. 1 hour left of the Rob Brown Show coming up next on ESPN Upstate.